My favorite thing to do is talk to you. Listening to how your life has been impacted and how you have grown in your organizational journey is so inspiring. Over the years, I have really internalized for myself and verbalized to you that perfect is not a thing. It does not exist. I have replaced the word perfect in my vocabulary with the word excellent. I am not a perfectionist. I am a person of excellence. I invite you to come to share your story about how you are being transformed from a reactive to a proactive person, from an overwhelmed homeowner to one who is now in more control of your time and your spaces. We all want to hear what more grace feels like in your life with your unique circumstances. Do not wait until you are a perfectly organized person. Remember, perfect does not exist. I want to hear from you. Please sign up to join me for a Wednesday podcast interview at organize365.com/Wednesday. Well, you have asked, we have answered. Emily Kelly, welcome back to the Organize 365 podcast.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
So you and I were catching up the other day, and a couple of times over the course of the last 10 months or a year or so, you're like, oh, we should record a podcast. I'm like, oh, not yet. No, not yet. And then we were talking the other day and I was like, okay, now it's time.
Yep. Let's do it this week.
Yeah. So I am going to be recording a podcast for you guys, a Friday podcast, about how your relationship with your siblings is the longest relationship you will have in your entire life, longer than with your parents or with your spouse or with your children. Like, the relationship you have with your sibling is the longest experience you will ever have. And even though there are years between us, and so we experience things differently, like I went to Catholic school, Emily went to public school, that kind of stuff, we're 4 years apart in age. You know, we both experienced 9/11 together and our parents getting divorced together and our father passing away together. And there are things that you experience with your sibling that you will not experience with anyone else. And you will be, you will need to rely on each other and support each other through those transitions that no one else will experience the way that you will. So, yeah, I really value our relationship. But the funny thing about siblings is, sometimes you go months without talking just because things just get too busy, or you're in transition, or like you're working on something internally and you really just don't want to talk to your sister about it right now.
So not yet.
Not yet.
Right.
So we've gotten, I know you guys have been asking to hear from Emily. How's Emily doing? Emily's doing great.
Yes.
And so really we're going to actually record a series of podcasts here because we know we're going to talk for hours and I'm not going to put it up as one podcast this time. So in this first podcast, Emily, I really just want to turn the microphone over to you, everyone here at Organize 365, both in the home office and of course in the audience, knows you, loves you, knows your story. And we're like, so what's been going on? Tell us.
Yeah. What's next? Yeah. Well, I guess I'll start, you know, this kind of was prompted by me just wanting to feed back to you about this past 10 months and the previous almost 5 years, and how what you had invested in me during that time, I have just recently in this new role that I have, where I feel like, yeah, I've landed. I think this one's going to stick, and we'll get to that part of the story. You know, I needed to learn some key things that I could have only learned working for you, that made it possible for me to be able to move to the next level of success in my career. For example, the manner in which you deliver things, even if you're right or you have the right data and all those other things. You know, I remember, I can't remember what the situation was, and I was so frustrated, and I can be very intense and direct. And you were like, but if you say it in a sing-songy way, people don't take it that way. And I was like, but I don't feel sing-songy. And it's true. You know, it's that delivery that makes a big difference. And, you know, just thinking about the whole picture, and maybe today's not the day, you know, the timing of your delivery is sometimes critical too. And reading the room or knowing what else is going on in that employee's life or the other tasks that they have going on in relation to whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. And the grace piece, you know, and I think I've talked about that in previous podcasts that we've recorded about giving myself grace and how I wasn't able to give grace to others because I wasn't giving it to myself. And I'll talk a little bit more about this throughout the, you know, the story, but one thing that I definitely don't want to forget to share that I learned in this past year was this little book that I read every day called Jesus Calling. And there was one day that said, when you start to get worried about something or you start to feel anxious, just whisper, I trust you, Lord. Just whisper, I trust you, Lord, and let me handle it. And it seems like a simple thing, a trite thing, you know, like, is it really going to work? You know, and it works. It works. So I left you to pursue what I thought was the dream job. You know, it's like, I can't stay here anymore because I got to go. I got to do this. This is where it's meant to be, you know? And you were like, yes, I agree. This is awesome. And we were able to just mutually, you know, depart after that 4.5 years of all that we had built into each other. And I want to mention too, that, you know, I think I might've mentioned, but maybe I didn't, that I think it was time. You know what I mean? I think that season of us being together, and I know you agree, had come and gone, and you were being so faithful to me to allow me to continue to work for you. But I didn't feel like I was bringing to the table as much as you were compensating me for.
Yeah. So the only thing I pipe in here about that is I very verbally have always said that I would never fire you. Like you had
right.
a job. For
that was
like,
the deal. Right.
Yeah. And I had, not in relation to you, but I did have people who counseled me on growing the Organized 365 business. They were like, okay, that's fine. If that's the way you feel about your family members working for you, that there's always an opportunity for them here, but sometimes you're holding them back because you're making it too comfortable for them. And I was like, And I almost think it had to have been your dream job in order for you to be the one to break it off for me, because I never was going to. And so even though, and we'll talk about that, did not pan out to be the dream job that you thought it was going to be, it started this year of exploration and transformation in your life that I would not have sparked for you because of my mindset that, you know, this company is a family company and it is to support my family as much as possible. And so if you are a business owner, I don't think I could have let you go. I don't think that's a thing that would have happened. You had to have left. Yeah. But I do think it was for the best. I do think that it was God's plan.
I agree. And I think the way that it happened was the only way that we would both feel that way about it. You know what I mean? So I went to work for Firestone and I was so excited. And I went and bought a whole bunch of new clothes because I hadn't been going out, you know, to work. I was working in what I'm wearing today, you know, a sweatshirt and yoga pants. And so I invested in that and kind of leveled up my dress code and my shoes and a little bit of jewelry from Amazon or whatever, and got up early and went to work. And there were, I think the first week that I started was corporate was coming in, and they often have corporate coming in, which means they come in, you work all day, then they do a dinner, and it's basically a 13-hour day. And so there were a lot of those, which was a big adjustment. It's a big adjustment going from working completely remotely for 4.5 years to even working hybrid, I would think, but to then full-time getting up, getting dressed, going in the car, you know, working all day and coming home, and then also having it be 13-hour days, it was just a lot. And so I would do a rock star in the morning and I would do espresso at lunch. And then when I came home and went to bed, I would take my melatonin and I kept, you know, pushing myself up with the energy and then pulling myself down with the energy, and just to, because I wanted to succeed so badly. And there were so many moving pieces. You know, I was the director of marketing and member experience, which was a new role, which I didn't realize when I was hired. They had not arranged that department that way previously. And then I hired someone to support me in the member experience. And we were in an office smaller than this office that I'm in now together, which was a lot. And Then we also have a corporate marketing department where I had someone regionally in Texas above me and someone above that person. And so there was that corporate piece that I really had never done to that level. And it's its own thing. And I fully admit I can do a lot of things and I have a lot of abilities, but playing games is not one. I am going to get the job done. I don't kiss butt over here. You know, I'm going to work hard and get it done. And so that was a challenge for me also, because I don't perceive when other people are playing games, so that then I'm moving my chess pieces around. I don't even know what's happening. You know what I mean? Because that's not what's going on in my head. You know, I'm strategic, but not in that way. And so anyway, so the days were long and I was pushing up my energy and pulling it down. And then one day I was in my office and doing my work, and my best girlfriend works there still. And she had come to the door, and I turned my head to the left, and I just all of a sudden got this feeling like super dizzy, like I was going to fall over or faint. And I thought, that's weird. And oh, so there was that. And there was another, like, my right arm kept just going numb and for no reason. And I couldn't figure it out. So I went to the doctor and she said, it's probably vertigo. Here's some exercises. She gave me a piece of paper that had the Epley procedure on it. Didn't show me, didn't walk me through it, nothing. She gave me a piece of paper, said, go home and do this and you'll be fine. So that night I went to bed at like 9 o'clock and I woke up at this time Rocco is getting up in the middle of the night because he's just in this, I forget what they call it. There's something toward the end of the dog's life where they have this, they're not really sure where they are or what time it is or what's going on. And it's like a kind of an anxiety thing or whatever. So he would often wake up in the middle of the night and want to get off the bed. And so I'd get up and put him off the bed, and then he'd wander around the house for a while and come back and want to get back in the bed. And then I put him. And so that was interrupting my sleep as well. And so it was like 1 a.m. and he wanted to get off the bed. So I got up to take him off the bed and I felt like I was so drunk. Like if you've ever been where you just, the room starts spinning and you just got to lie down because you've had too much to drink. That's how I felt, like 10 times worse than I ever had in my whole life. And I thought, what the heck is going on? And so I went and got a trash can and put it by my bed because I was nauseous. My head felt like it weighed 800 pounds and I was just sweating. It was like 800 degrees inside my body. And I'm laying there and I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to die in this bed tonight and no one is going to know. And I couldn't remember if my neighbor Sally had a key or not. And this was getting later and later. Now it's about 3:30 or 4 in the morning. And she often gets up at like 4 to walk her dog. And so I was praying, one, that she would be up and get my message. And two, that she would have a key. Because if I had given her one, it had to have been 20 years ago when she moved in. And so I called her and I said, do you have a key to my house? Because I knew if I called 911, I was not going to be able to get down to the door to let them in. Because my condo is a loft, so I would have had gone down the steps. And she said, yes, I do, and I'll be over. And so she came over and came in, and I was laying on the floor, I mean, just praying for death almost. It just was so awful and scary. And so she came in, and I knew she was coming, so I called 911, and they sent the EMTs, and they came in. And I had told them, you know, I went to the doctor and everything like that. They said, oh, well, if you went to the doctor and she sent you home, then we can't do anything. I said, not acceptable. That is not acceptable. You are not going to leave me here. Also, I have an elderly dog. Like, there's no way. So I said, and I had put my paper from that day over to on my table in this room so that I would put it in my medical binder. So I said, Sally, go in my office on that white table and get that piece of paper. It's got my doctor's name on it and bring it in here to these guys. Because it had said, you know, what the situation was. I said to them, I said, call my doctor then. And it's on her if I die here. And so they did. And she said, it's okay. You can take her. So they had to send a different ambulance then to come and take me. So then we're waiting and they came. And I honestly, Lisa, I didn't think I was going to be able to get down the steps to get into the ambulance. And I'm just moving as slow as I can, one step at a time, just wailing in pain. And got down to the bottom of the steps and then into the garage, and they had a stretcher there. And it is freezing cold and pouring down rain. And I'm like almost naked. I've got like a little thin robe on because I didn't want to be naked in front of all these people. And so they took me to the hospital, and I got my eyes closed this whole time too, because when you have vertigo, if you open your eye, it's like the whole room is spinning. So I've got my eyes closed the whole way, and I get to the hospital, and I remember just hearing, I felt like I was in the middle of this like round room, like I was being studied, because I kept hearing these doors open and doors open. And anyway, so I was there for a while, and I had had them take me to the closest urgent care because I knew I already have motion sickness. So I didn't want to be in the ambulance any longer than I had to be. So I had them take me to the urgent care. Well, just so you know, urgent care can pretty much put a Band-Aid on and take your blood pressure, and that's it. So a couple hours later, another ambulance took me downtown, and I went to that hospital. And, you know, I didn't have a way to call and let anyone know. I did have my neighbor, Sally, text my boss. I can't remember if I had her email him or what, to say, I'm going to the hospital and I'm not going to be there tomorrow. That was it.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what happened on my end. So interesting. You didn't show up to work. If your boss got a text, they did not tell your good friend who works there. Yes. Nobody.
Yes. She said he went right down and said, Emily's in the hospital. And Angela said, is she? She didn't know.
No, exactly. So what happened was I got a message through Instagram from Angela saying, your sister's not here. We don't know where she is. She's not answering her phone. Can you find anything out? And that's when I started figuring out like, okay, well, she's not at work. I tried your phone, of course, that didn't go anywhere. And I was like, well, I think I have power of healthcare, power of attorney. I just started calling the hospitals in Akron. Luckily, Akron's not a big city, so there aren't that many medical networks that you need to call to. And I did find that you had been at the urgent care, and they said you were discharged. And so then we were stuck again. We couldn't find you at home. We waited until like 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And, you know, I'm like, Angela, did you hear anything? No, I didn't hear anything. You know, didn't hear anything. I was like, I'm calling again. So then I called again. I got someone else. They're like, oh yeah, she's in, like you had been transferred to a different hospital, but urgent care or whatever, whoever I had talked to at the hospital said that you were discharged. They only saw that part. Maybe you were in transit during that time. I don't know. But by the time I was able to get to the floor where you were an actual nurse that knew that you were there, then we knew that you were there. And then we asked to talk to you. They said, no. I asked that when you woke up for you to be able to give a verbal that I could have power
That's
to
right.
talk to people. And I told Angela where you were, and she started heading over there. She's like, well, good luck for them keeping me out. She was like, I'm going to get in there. I'll figure out what's going on. I will call you, because I was trying to figure out if I needed to get up there or not. Like, what was the situation? Did you need me there or did you not need me there? And since then, you and I have put a couple of new things in place where I am on all of your medical paperwork and I have power to talk to everyone. But it was interesting. Angela and I have known each other a long time. She didn't have my phone number. She sent me a voicemail through Instagram. I didn't even know you could do that. I almost ignored it. But you know me, I'm always up to date on all my DMs. So I listened to it. And that's when I was like, oh, geez, what's going on?
Wow.
Yeah, we're not old. I mean, maybe people think we're old, but I don't think you and I are old. So this comes out of nowhere. Like when you have these unexpected medical issues and you need to find out about your sibling, you don't think of having power of healthcare and power of attorney for your sibling. You always think about it for your parents or your children, but you don't think about it for your siblings, and you should have it for your siblings.
Well, so that's my question, because I know at some point in the past year or so, I have sent you my will, my power of attorney and all those things. Was that after the hospital?
Yeah. I know I knew about the will, but I don't know if I had power of healthcare before that. And the other thing is, even if I have it, I'm not there. And so it is easier if you just in your medical records, actually give it in your medical records, and then it like pulls up and you don't even have to produce the paper.
I didn't know that was a thing, but I have had my will, my power of attorney for healthcare and all of that for years in my safe in this office, which did us no good. So if you do have it, you got to send it to the person who it's for, you know what I mean? Anyway, so yeah, so that's that. So then Angela showed up and, you know, just to see what was going on and brought me a couple things and, you know, what do I need and all stuff like that. So that was Monday night that I was taken in the middle of the night. So 4 a.m. Monday, and I was in the hospital until Thursday. So I want to say Tuesday night, they were starting to say like, don't know if there's anything we can do for you. So then I got on my Facebook and said, anybody had vertigo? How does this work? What do we do? Blah, 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 blah. And so people who had said that, you know, try this drug, try that drug. It's this, it's that. This causes it. This blah, blah, blah. So I got way more from my Facebook friends on that issue than I did from these doctors because I'm taking up a hospital bed and they can only charge me for a pill, you know, or whatever. They're not doing the raising my heart rate and all that stuff. And so I said, I'd like to try, I can't remember what it was called.
Yep.
And they said, okay, it was a patch. So they put this patch on my thing. And I said, great, I want to stay overnight. I want you to watch and see what happens. So the next morning, the girl came in and said, you know, what do you think? And I said, it didn't do it. I want to try this pill. And she said, I guess so. And so they ripped the patch off, which has a half-life where you're supposed to wait a certain period of time before you take this pill. And so they ripped the patch off and gave me the pill. So now their counter, you know what I mean, is making it worse. And I said, I want you to watch me overnight again, knowing that this is going to cost me a fortune. But also when I get home alone and can't walk straight down a hallway and have an elderly dog I've got to take out. And thank God I have nice neighbors who are coming and taking care of him and feeding him and all that. And that had keys also. And so then that didn't work. And then now the physical therapy guy is coming and trying to make me walk down the hallway. And I was like, I don't want to, this isn't helping. You know what I mean? So anyway, they exhausted everything they could do. I wasn't generating enough income for that hospital room. And they sent me home with a cane. And my elderly neighbor came and picked me up and helped me in and made me a sandwich and fed me for a couple of days. Now I'm only a month into this new job. So I don't have any vacation time. I don't have any health benefits. I don't have any of that stuff. And so every day is cha-ching, cha-ching, I'm going broke. Right when I got home, I said, you know, I'm not able to walk a straight line. I certainly can't drive, you know, but I want to get back to work. So Angela brought me my laptop and I could manage to just sit still and look at that screen best I could for a couple of days. Really wanted to get back to work. And so I got home on Thursday. I want to say I worked from home Monday and Tuesday, and then Wednesday morning corporate was coming back and the guy I had hired was starting. And so he came and picked me up to take me to work. And that was like a 13-hour day. So I'm back at it again. And fast forward a couple of weeks, you know, little by little, I started not looking like a drunk person walking down the hallway. And I was killing it. I mean, they had 18 different platforms I had never used before that I was learning. I was putting together the strategic marketing plan and the social media plan and all these things in a hurry with these people in corporate just pressing down my throat, you know what I mean, with deadlines and things like that were totally unrealistic. But, you know, I'm doing it. I love it here. I want to get this done. And we had a meeting one morning and that my boss said, hey, when you get a chance, can you come in my office? And I said, sure, I got to do this and I'll be right there. And I walked in and the club director was in there too. And I said, uh-oh, you're not going to fire me, are you? And he said, actually, yes, we are. And I was stunned. I mean, I have never been so stunned in my life. I had never been written up. There was no, hey, you might want to do this differently or change your attitude or you shouldn't. There was never any warning whatsoever. And I said, what do you mean? He said, sorry, it's just not working out. I said, isn't there something I can do? Can't I fix it? And he said, no, I'm sorry. We've just decided it's not working out. And then it hit me like, this is really happening. And I just burst into tears. I'm just snot running down my face. It was so embarrassing. And they're just sitting there staring at me, like not saying anything, just there. And then he starts reading through this separation agreement or whatever that you have to sign, you know? And I'm like, now I'm out of body. You know what I mean? I'm completely out of body. Like, is this really happening? And then I thought, oh my God, you know, this office is down a little hallway that you have to go through the foyer then to go down the steps to get to my office. I'm going to encounter at least 5 other employees when I leave this office to get my things. And so now I'm starting to move ahead to like, okay, okay, this is happening. You can feel this and worry about the tears later. How am I going to get my things and get out of here as fast as I possibly can? And no, I'm not going to sign that paper right now. There's no way I can read it right now. And he said, that's fine. And I thought, who in the right mind would sign that thing when you're in that emotion?
I cannot believe you let someone go this way. I mean, like, it's just, anyways.
So
I'll keep my opinion.
I said, okay, I need to get my things out of my office. And I had moved in. I mean, I had Sunday baskets and slash pockets and binders and flowers and, you know, and I didn't think it was that much stuff, but I had a lot of stuff in there. And I said, I need to get my things. They said, if you want to come back, you can do it later. And I thought in my head, I am never, ever, ever coming back here. I am never stepping foot here ever again. If you do this to me, it's over. It is so over. And I said, no, I need to get it now. And so right in that hallway, there's a door that goes out to like right at the front where you pull up to go in. It's kind of like a secret door where the employees can go into their office that way. She said, we can go out that door and then go in the back way to your office and then come back out that way. I said, great. And she gave me a box of Kleenex and I blew my nose everywhere. And then we went down in my office. And before I had gone up there, I said to the guy that I had hired, I said, I have to meet with my boss, say a prayer that I'm not being fired. And he goes, you're not going to get fired. So I walked in and I said, I got fired. And he goes, no, you didn't. I said, yes, I did. No, you didn't. I said, yes, I did. No, you didn't. I'm like, yes, I did. And he was like, oh my gosh. And now the director is standing right there too. So it's not like we have a private moment. You know what I mean? And he said, oh my gosh, I love you. I'll call you later. And I was like, okay. And so I started putting my things together. And then I realized, oh geez. And I have clothes in the cabinet and I have bought all this wine at a retail discount. And I mean, I had 5 feet by 3 feet worth of baskets and bins and I'm trying to get it all corralled together, you know, best I could. And then she ends up talking to someone in the hallway and now I'm ready, but I don't want that person to know what's going on. So I'm just standing there in misery for like 10 minutes. And I'm like, can we please get this over with? And don't let anyone else show up in this room while this is happening. You know what I mean? I just want to get out of here. Oh, and I had to go in the locker room because I had a locker with things in there. So as I was going there, Angela was walking down the other hallway and she goes, hey, what's going on? I said, I just got fired. She goes, what? I said, yeah. She said, oh my gosh, do you want to go in the locker room? I said, I have to, I got to clean out my locker. And so we talked just brief. She was just as stunned as me. And then the lady helped me with my things and walked me out. And she said, do you want me to walk you to your car? I said, no, I'm just going to leave everything here and go and pull my car up and load it up. And that was that. And I just remember thinking like, well, now what? Now what? I've left Lisa and this has gone to pot. What am I going to do now? And I did ask him, I said, well, can I file for unemployment? And he said, yes. And so I knew I had to tell you anyway, because you were going to get a paper that said, so I couldn't like just hide it till I got the next thing. You were going to know, you know? And so you were the first person I called and I said, guess what? And you had just, and I wasn't calling to get my job back. I just was calling to let you know, you're my sister. Number one, you care about me. And two, you needed to know because that was going to come back on you. And you said, I didn't even ask, I don't think, but you said, oh, Em, I just hired Virginia last week. And I was like, wasn't meant to be, you know? And so it was like, God closed the door, opened this door, closed that door, and had already closed that opportunity to go back. You know what I mean? It was like all meant to be, didn't feel good. And I was very mad. I was so upset and hurt by how that happened. But I thought, well, I'm surprised, but God is not surprised. This is not something that he's like, oh, geez, I didn't know they were going to do that today. He totally knew that was going to happen when I left you, that that was exactly how that was going to go. And so I chose to press into, okay, what's next? And I've been in this situation before, you know, where I lost my job and had to find another one. And I know how long that takes. And being a single person without a whole bunch of savings and resources, I knew I better get busy because the bills are going to keep coming and looking for a job isn't going to pay them.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you could share more of what happened between that and how you are where you are now. But I think this is a good point for me to interject here for everyone who's listening. Everyone listening has been in this place before. Everyone. You had something that was good, but you weren't sure if it was great. And then something else looked better. And so then you go after the thing that looks better. And then you go there and the thing that looks better was not better. And now you've got egg on your face. And now what? You just don't even know what to do next. And, you know, you talked to me about coming on the podcast after this had happened, quickly after this had happened. And I said, no, because I knew you hadn't found, you hadn't resolved this yet. Mm-hmm. And I wanted you in a place of resolution. And of course, you eventually put on LinkedIn that you weren't working at Firestone because you were working for another job. So then the emails start coming to me. What's going on with Emily's? I'm like, okay, like, da, 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 da. And I was like, oh yeah, she's great. She's great. She's great. Like, she's in the hospital. Her dog's dying. She has no job. She's great. She's great. She's great. You know, like rainbows and unicorns over here because you were in transition. Like, and I was just holding that plate. Like, I knew you were going to be fine, but you weren't on the other side yet. So there's nothing to discuss. Like, what are you going to, yeah, the cesspool that I'm in right now, the color of it right now is, I mean, like, there's nothing to discuss when you're in the transition. And the point I want to make here is, many of you find Organize 365 when you are in the transition, not when everything is going great and not before everything falls apart. You find Organize 365 when you are where I was in December of 2011 going, if this is the way the rest of my life is going to be, like, I cannot do this for the rest of my life. Like, I cannot live this disorganized, this overwhelmed, this stressed, this negative, this, like, I don't like the person that I am. Like, I do not like this person. How do I become a different person? And so I thank you so much for sharing in so much detail how you went from such a high high to such a devastating low, because we have all been there. And it's not, that is not the story that we usually talk about in Organize 365. It is now that you are at this low low, which then gets lower. And then how do you strategically purpose to create a future, a positive future? And that is what so few people can do. So few people know how to do it. And even if you do figure out how to do it, so few people want to do the work that is required to do it. It's just easier to complain and get the attention for the complaining and just go on along your merry way. But the Organize 365 community is a community of people who have decided life is hard and I have a say. And it's not a snapping your fingers and it will all be fixed tomorrow. It is a 9 month, 18 month, 3 year, 5 year transition. I don't know how long it is for you. But in this case, we're looking at a 9 month transition from that day to this day and what happened in that place. So I would love for you to finish out this podcast episode. So what did happen after you abruptly left Firestone until where you find yourself today, especially as it relates to your health? Because you mentioned the vertigo, your puppy, who was not a puppy, aging dog, and your employment.
So real quick, two things that I want to jump back to that you just shared before I continue on with what I was saying. One, you said, you know, life is hard. And, you know, there's that saying, marriage is hard. Singleness is hard. Choose your hard, you know, and it's your mindset. It's your attitude. It's your, okay, this is what happened. You know, now I have screamed from the rooftops as loud as I possibly could. The only thing I would have shouted louder from the rooftops is if I ever got engaged, that I was going to Firestone. Everywhere, everyone, all my Facebook, every day, LinkedIn. I mean, my whole world, anyone I've ever met in a bathroom at a bar knew I was at Firestone and I was loving it. And then I was not at Firestone and there was no reason why. And I was not allowed to talk about it. You know, I'm not really allowed to be in great detail, which is why I've kind of left names out and things like that. Because, you know, people were afraid to ask because there was no explanation and I didn't know the answer, you know? So it's, boy, what happened? I don't know. I have no idea. They let me go. And I do think it was partly that they decided the way that they had restructured wasn't working. They had too many cooks in the kitchen. But that's not what they said anyway. So here we are. I have been on my high horse and I have been bucked off into the middle of the ocean. And so I thought, well, God is not surprised. So let's get busy on finding out what his next plan is. And I went through my file cabinet that I can't ditch because it's full of memory type things from my career. So like when I was a teacher, I have all my evaluations from my student teaching and my portfolio from that and those types of things. And so I pulled it all out and I pulled out everything I had left from when I ran Rainmaker, the strategic marketing planning firm that I had and how I used to do that and all the contacts that I still had. And I dug out that information. I just started praying and I started making a inventory of where I had been, what I had done, what I enjoyed, what I was good at. I typed out a couple of the affirming things that the people had said that were evaluating me in my teaching to remind me and encourage me, or my performance reviews of like that I was a good employee and so that my mind didn't start attacking me. And then I got a big like poster board type thing. And I kind of kept, instead of looking at my resume in chronological order, I did it based on when did you work for yourself? When did you work for a nonprofit? When did you work for a corporate? When did you work for a small to medium sized business? When did you volunteer? What boards have you been on? What groups? And kind of made like more of like a map of what did you enjoy? And I realized I had worked for myself more than I had ever worked for someone else. And I had worked for you more than I had ever worked for anyone else. Because I worked for you with Creative Memories for 6 years. And then I worked for you at Organize 365 for 4.5 and always really enjoyed that. But obviously that, you know, so just evaluate so that then when I'm going to look for the next thing, what is that going to look like? You know, is it going to be a small nonprofit, or is it going to be, you know, $1 million company, or is it going to be a corporation, or do I want to work for this, you know, volunteer thing in the meantime, or what am I going to do? And so, and while I was doing that, I kind of just quickly one day figured out how to put together a one-page website on WordPress with the three key things I was able to offer that would generate enough quick money to pay my bills. And it was home organizing, strategic marketing plans, and helping if you've lost a loved one, liquidate whatever's left. And I got a friend of mine from high school whose father had just passed away and her mother lived right across the street. And they had all kinds of collections. She had Waterford and she had these special trunks and she had duck decoys, 100 duck decoys. And she had these special little boxes like grandma used to have, those little pill boxes that were ceramic that are like $300 a piece, but women collect them. And so we went through her house and inventoried all those things. And I went to work on figuring out where to get the most money for those things. And I didn't know how much to charge her because I'd never done that, but I knew where to get the most. And I said, I will just charge you 20% of whatever we make. And if we don't make anything, I won't charge you anything. And she said, great. And so we did those things little by little, and Mary Pat came and bought some of the Waterford for her girls at a great discount, and she was happy. And I found a man in Pennsylvania that does auctions. And so he came like American Pickers in a van, get all the duck decoys and put them in an auction for us. She ended up making, I think it was $10,000 on that. I ended up getting like $1,000 from that effort for him to just come and we wrapped those things up all day. And then I was starting to call business owners I knew who might need help with their marketing. And then I was just sending out resumes like crazy and cover letters and things like that. And I had applied for a job on Upwork that this guy needed a strategic marketing plan and help with his LinkedIn and stuff like that. And throughout the course of the interview, he said, you know, what if I hired you full time? And I said, well, if you hire me today, you can, but I got a couple things that maybe next week I won't have 40 hours a week. I don't know. Anyway, I went through a very rigorous interview process with him. I was the number one candidate out of 200 applicants. He ended up hiring me. What I didn't know, because he wasn't on LinkedIn, there was no website, there was no way to validate the questions I had asked in the interview, like, how many employees do you have? He said 3 to 5. Turns out all those employees work part-time in the Philippines. That's not an employee. That's a subcontractor. And so it started off with a couple red flags. And within 6 weeks, that fell apart because he wanted me to guarantee a 300% return on his website in 3 years, or I couldn't keep my job and I wasn't going to lie to him. And so that's kind of how that went south. But as I saw it going south, I hadn't put on my LinkedIn that I had started there yet because I didn't want the same thing to happen again. So I was just kind of keeping it quiet that I was doing that for him until it was 3 months in and then I felt safe. So it was only 6 weeks. So I hadn't put it on. So I was still getting things about, you know, jobs that were available and things like that. And so I started applying for them a couple days before it all fell apart. And then Monday was the day we decided it wasn't going to go. That Friday, I had my first interview at the job that I'm at now. And between that Monday and like, I think it was 4 weeks, I was hired and starting where I am now, which is a local IT company about 35 minutes away from where I live. And they have a great reputation. And I really think part of the reason they hired me is because of my connections in the community and my involvement in the chambers and things like that, which is my sweet spot and what I love. And so I'm really enjoying that and feel like, okay, if this hadn't happened, that wouldn't have been, you know, and it was just one big follow the dominoes until you get to where you're going, you know, and I always want to stay wherever I go forever. And we'll see how that goes, you know, but I think so far I'm happy and they're happy and I'm working my buns off. And I think in the next episode is when we'll talk about what that looks like. And then real quick, I didn't really talk much about Rocco. But I think also, had I not lost my job at Firestone, I wouldn't have been able to be present with him for the last couple of weeks of his life where I was home and I was looking for work and he was declining. And I had to make that decision of like, you know, you said in the very beginning of this podcast that you were committed to not letting me go. And when you said that, I thought that's kind of how I was with Rocco. He wasn't ever going to give up his spirit. I just kept praying that he would sleep so deep and so long. I felt like he was sleeping his way to heaven. And I was like, can't he just please fall asleep and not wake up? That's how I wanted him to go. But he wasn't. And after I put him down, I realized I'm glad I did because he would have never given up his spirit. He was hanging in there for me until I was ready. And so I can't remember what really prompted me to say, okay, it's time, you have to. And so I had a local company come to the house and I scheduled it so that I had a couple days, you know, to be able to be with him knowing that it was coming, which was very hard. And, you know, losing anyone, I always say, if you lose them quickly in a car accident, it's hard. If you lose them over 6 months with an illness or in hospice, it's hard. Again, you choose how you deal with that hard. And so those 3 days were hard, but I'm so grateful I had them and we snuggled. And my friend Shannon from Texas bought us both a Lanning steak for his last meal. Talk about spoiled royalty. He was so the king and the prince. And so anyway, she came. And, you know, that was a day where he was walking out and looking on the patio and I thought, oh, but it's here. We're doing it, you know? And so she said, is there any, do you have a treat or anything we could give him, you know, to distract him while I shoot him in the butt? And I said, ham. He still loves ham. And so I gave him a little piece of ham and she got him in the butt. And he kind of looked like, what is that? And he just went straight down into the blankie. And I just started petting him and telling him I loved him and crying and crying. She said, in a little bit, you know, in a little bit, we'll be ready. And then they do the second shot. And she said, you just let me know when you're ready. You're never ready. And I said, I think it's time. And so she did that. And I just kept petting him and talking to him and everything. And so then a little while later, she came back and she felt his heart. And she said, he's gone. I said, no, he's not. He's just sleeping. Like he's still, I didn't feel like he died. I just felt like he was still there just sleeping. And so she wrapped him up in a little blanket. He looked like when you get your baby when they're born, you know what I mean? And I was so afraid there were going to be like a bunch of dead dogs in the back of her truck, you know? And there weren't. She carried him down and she had a nice little bed in there for it to put him in and took him away. And then I didn't want to get his ashes back because then it was like it was real. You know what I mean? And so I kept putting it off and putting it off. And then she, and they're in like an hour away or so. And so I didn't want her to also have to make a special trip. I said, just let me know whenever you're in the area. And the first time she did, I said, I'm not ready. And the second time I said, that'll be fine. You can come. It was a Saturday. And then I texted a bunch of my girlfriends and said, I know this sounds ridiculous, but the ashes are coming back and I don't know how I'm going to do. So we're having like an informal calling hours for Rocco tomorrow, if you want to come over and bring a cocktail. And actually, I forgot about that. My neighbor Dory that just passed away was there because they came a little early. And she was there sitting at the bar in my garage, just talking to me, waiting. So she was there when they came and they put them in a beautiful, you get to choose if you want a tin can or whatever. And I, but all the same price. And I got a little box and they put him in a silk bag and they gave me his fur and his paw print. And the girls brought flowers and a little plaque and everything like that. And then a couple weeks later, my friend Melanie brought something, a little gift to me at girls' night. And I said, should I open it now? And she said, no, I don't think so. And I was like, oh, geez. She always gives very meaningful gifts. I thought, oh boy, this is about Rocco. And so usually in the girls' night, about 10 o'clock or so, now we're lively, we're dancing, we're laughing. It's really the most fun ever, you know? And so I was in a great mood and I thought, okay, I'm doing it. And so I went to open it and it's this canvas that has a poem that says, waiting at the door. And I swear to you, if Rocco could have written the words, it's exactly what he would say. You know, it was like, you brought me home and put me in your heart and we had great memories. And I know you miss me, but when you get to heaven, I'll be waiting at the door. Oh, I mean, I just cried my eyes out. I was like, oh my gosh, it's like he said it. And so in my bedroom, I have the bar stool that goes with this table that I never sit at. I put a blankie over that and I put that canvas there and I put his ashes there and a little silver plate and a candle. And I kiss him every morning and every night. And I tell him goodbye in the morning. And when I'm getting ready to watch a movie, I'll say, oh, let's watch a movie. What movie do you want to watch? And I'll light the candle. And I think it sounds so crazy, but everyone I've told that to who's ever had a dog that they mm-hmm. lost is like, that is not crazy at all. I do that too. In fact, yesterday I saw my friend Jimmy James, who did all my renovating, and he had kind of given me some keys before Rocco left of like, your house is going to become like the Taj Mahal and you are going to be so lonely and it's going to be so quiet and just all those things. And so yesterday he said, do you think you're going to get a new dog? And everybody asked me that. And I'm like, I don't think so. There's never another Rocco. And who knows, you know, I like to travel now and stuff like that. But he was thinking about getting another one. And I told him how I talk to him all the time. I said, isn't that crazy? He said, no. He said, when I leave for work in the morning, I say, have a great day, Scout. Keep your eye out on the house. And he's just sitting there in a box too. And I'm like, oh, it just makes me feel so much better. So that's kind of my way of coping, you know, through that loss. I just feel like he's still with me. I just wish I had his little furry body to snuggle at night, you know, and his tail a wagon. So I mentioned my friend Dory passed away and they were great buddies. He really loved her. And so the past couple of weeks I've been telling him, Dory's on her way. Dory's on her way. And he used to always just howl like a seal when she would come by because they had the best treats that he's not supposed to have. I said, make sure you howl real big for her and wag your tail when she gets there. And I know he did. You know, I know where he is. I know where she is and daddy. And so it's been one heck of a 10 months as far as, you know, $7,000 in medical bills and lost my buddy, lost my dream job. Boo hoo. But it's what you make of it, you know, and it's what you choose. And you choose your heart and you choose moment by moment every day how you're going to cope with whatever comes at you. And I'm really grateful that I know the Lord and that I've been able to learn that I trust you, Lord. So when I lost my job at Firestone, real quick, I started saying that every day, I trust you, Lord, I trust you, Lord. And then every time I would get someone to call me to do something or job interview or somebody gave me something I didn't expect to help me through, you know, whatever it was, I would write it down on one of your little index card things and put it in a vase, you know, and it was a visual reminder of all the good that was happening, all the favor I was getting, all the promise, all the hope, all the one day at a time, you know, and that's all this. And that's the other thing I learned was, you know, when they were wandering in the desert in the Bible, and God gave them the manna. He only gave them manna for one day. He didn't give them a whole week's worth. And so I remember taking that philosophy and that attitude of like, I trust you for today, what I need for today, one day at a time.
And I wasn't lying to you guys. When you said to me, how's Emily? And I said, she's okay. She's good. She was good. Because I knew she was going to be fine. And I think sometimes when we ask, you know, how is somebody doing? They're living their lives. Like, no one day is ever all good or all bad. It is both at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I knew Emily would find her way and I knew she would figure it out because she was continually seeking and striving. If she was not continually seeking and striving, then I would say, we need reinforcements here. But we never needed reinforcements. Mm-hmm. She just needed time and grace and space to figure out why she was moving from one thing to the next thing. And again, that transition from one thing to the next thing is long. Like, I have never sugarcoated that in Organize 365. And I remember when we were first doing marketing, you were like, don't tell them how long it's going to take. You're not selling this very well on the front end, Lisa. If you're telling them it's going to take them a year, two, 3 years, don't tell them it's going to take that long. Tell them it's just, I was like, but it is. And they need to know that if you really want to live an organized life, you have to learn the skill of organizing at a deeper level than filling a black bag or making a rainbow bookshelf. It is a deeper level of organization. And that is what we're going to talk about in the next episode. So come back next week, or if you're listening to this later, queue up episode number 2. We'll see you again in a minute, Em.
Bye, guys.